Well, welcome to the first of our poly panels in the lead up to this federal election. Now, we dabbled with this idea in the state election, of course, and we thought what we'd do is we'd look at each seat individually. We'd go out to the listeners of those seats and ask them what they thought were the important issues, and then we'd invite the candidates in to have a bit of a yak to us about what their thoughts are in regard to those key issues. Each weekday for the next week, we're going seat by seat around the entire region. We'll look at each electorate in the area. In breakfast, Dan and Jenny are asking people who live in the seat the questions they want their candidates to answer. Then on mornings, Kaya asks you to vote on the questions that you think are the two most important. So we'll get to those two questions with our four candidates who've joined us in the studio today for this discussion. It's the seat of Newcastle, and the Greens candidate is John McKenzie. John, hello.
Hello, how are you going?
Good. What drove you to stand again?
Oh, look, I think there's an opportunity in Newcastle for a progressive candidate to be standing, and I think my experience on council over the last 2 years has really sharpened my understanding of the needs of Newcastle, and I'm really excited about the vision that I can take to Canberra of a renewable energy-driven, clean, smart city into the future.
Darren Brollo is with us representing the Animal Justice Party. What's driven you to this stage in your life, Darren?
Well, I've been an animal rights activist for a long time, probably close to 30 years now. And, I feel that, certainly getting, animal voice, having, a political voice for animals is essential now really to move forward with policies and with legislation through government.
And the candidate for the Great Australian Party is BJ Futter. BJ, thank you for coming in.
Hi, how are you doing? It's Footer, actually.
Footer, is it? Righto. Okay, thank you so much for clarifying that. Right. We didn't get the chance to speak on the way in. It was a mad rush, of course. You're a candidate this time around. What's your political experience? When have you campaigned before?
2014, I stood for the Australian Hemp Party from the candidate for Senate back then. We did fairly well, which brings me to the reason I'm doing it for the GAP Party. Up until about 3 months ago, I was pretty despondent about how people are pushed into suppression in all facets of the demographic across Australia, not just Newcastle. And it comes down to their well-being, how they feel every day, the water quality they drink, the food quality they eat, and the disgraceful medical system that they have to put up with. My major issues, seeing the constitution thing that the GAP Party is on about is a big one. The original constitution is an important subject.
Okay, well, let's not progress too far into the arguments at this stage. We'll get to them in just a moment. And Sharon Clayton's with us. Haven't had enough yet, Sharon?
Absolutely not. I've got the best job in the world. And I'm really proud to be taking what I think is Labor's most bold and progressive vision for the future of Australia into this election.
You're in the spotlight a lot in politics. It's an eye-opener for most people. Those amongst John's had a certain level of it at council level, of course, and I recall as working on the south coast of New South Wales on a Sunday when a councillor who I think was on about $6,000 a year was the stipend in those days, was bailed up because somebody's garbage didn't arrive on time. That sort of feedback, the invasion into your life?
It's not invasion. I actually love the people of Newcastle are really raw and honest in their engagement with me. And whether I'm at the supermarket doing my grocery shopping or I am, crossing the road, people stop and say, hey, Sharon, and tell me their point of view very directly. And it's bricks and bouquets. So you always are never left wondering.
All right, we've got a gentleman in the studio who's going to give you his point of view right up front. And I want to get to our first question today. It'll come as no surprise, I don't think. And it's probably been quite a quantum leap in terms of opinion polling for this federal election, is that the number one question that our listeners and the voters in the seat of Newcastle want you to respond to is the question of climate change. And the question specifically is, why do you think your party's response to climate change will be enough? And we'll start with the Greens, with John McKenzie.
Thanks, Paul. This is an issue which is, deep in the DNA of the Greens in many ways. It's the reason why we still exist as a party and why we're able to continue to attract growing support, because our commitment under a climate change policy is really based on the science. It's really directing a policy response to that imperative that's coming from the science, which is saying if we don't get on top of our climate change emissions by 2030, we are going to experience the worst impacts of climate change. And I'm proud to be able to say that this is an area area that the Greens have worked on consistently over the last 10 years, 15 years, and we're taking to this election our climate renewal plan 2030, which actually outlines a very clear vision for how we will move away from fossil fuel dependence by 2030. It includes the way that we will lead the world in terms of establishing a renewable energy industry, looking at 180,000 jobs across the country that we can build in renewables and also in renewable energy export industry. Is it enough? I mean, this is the key question. We've seen just earlier this week the UN report on biodiversity published, which warns that perhaps even in the best case scenario, we're still looking at an enormous extinction risk in the world in coming decade. So our plan really sets us up based on the science as to how we can move from our current situation into a renewable energy economy of the future without sacrificing jobs, providing economic benefit for the people, and addressing the science and making sure that we are addressing the issues of climate change.
Thank you, John. Darren Brollo, has climate change been an issue that's driven you?
It has, absolutely. You know, the Animal Justice Party, you know, in most ways, they're everything that we talk about in terms of, you know, the green view on the climate, we certainly do support. There's one other area that seems to be neglected, and it's almost like the elephant in the room. And that is animal agriculture. Now, we know that, you know, animal agriculture actually contributes to over 50% of all greenhouse gas emissions in the world.
That's a very high number.
It is a very high number.
That wouldn't correspond with what I would have thought. I would have heard recently that methane emissions, for example, in Australia would be somewhere around 13 or 15%, maybe.
No, so we're talking about the entire footprint. So from the very beginning of growing soybean right through to the final product, you know, so it's as an entire footprint, it contributes to over 50% globally. Now, you know, to put that in perspective, if we were to look at, you know, the entire transport industry, so cars, trucks, buses, planes, ships, combine all of them and it still doesn't reach that number. So it's a massive problem, and it's certainly one that's been, you know, it's been hidden. It's kept as a secret for a long, long time. Naturally, the animal agricultural industry does not want this information to be out there. You know, people talk that, you know, are constantly blaming the government for this and for that. However, it's a choice they can make themselves as well. They can contribute to a positive future. And I think it's really important that this is also addressed in Parliament. You know, when we talk about methane, for example, as you did, you know, it's 30 times more damaging than CO2 to the environment. 30 times more. So, you know, these are facts that are coming from the UN and the World Health Organization. So these are facts that have been represented scientifically. And, you know, we use this obviously to formulate an entire plan to help the environment.
So the logic of your argument is that animal husbandry is more dangerous to us than coal-fired power stations, for argument's sake.
It certainly is equally as dangerous, and you know, the fact is that we need as a society, we need to start the transition and the move towards plant-based agriculture. It's really simple. We can't support what we're doing now. We can't feed 7 billion people in the world. You know, we grow food predominantly in the third world or in areas that, you know, with you know, societies that don't necessarily have the money to be eating the food that, like the meat, for example, that's being grown for, you know, for the wealthy. So it's a major issue, and it's one that, as I said, it's the elephant in the room.
Okay. I can't dispute what you're saying, but if there are listeners at home that want to fact check, you know what to do, 0487 99 1233 or 1300 33 1233 to get in touch with us. BJ, your approach to climate change?
It seems fitting that I actually in the third person in this discussion. Climate change depends if you're looking at 500 years or 500,000 years, but let's go for our 500, 2,000 years, whatever. And this takes me back to my original political career, which was with the Hemp Party. And it's not unbeknown now, if you do your research, that the plant that is able to do many, many things for us, as in hemp, besides cannabis, is astounding for all these things these gentlemen mentioned. The hemp seed is 30% pure protein, 105 or 112 amino acids, the perfect ratio of omega 3 and 6 for nutrition. It can replace the meat that's required to then, unfortunately, do the methane problem, which unfortunately then causes a greenhouse problem and a footprint, whatever. So take away the need for massive amounts of protein in society with a simple hemp-based protein protocol in your diet. It's very easy, extremely easy. You'll be surprised how well your wellness comes back, how your illnesses disappear and your pain relief just on hemp seeds alone. That much. We can run motor cars on hemp biofuel. We can build buildings out of hemp. It does everything, this plant that is presently being, the energy being used to abuse the planet for our needs, can be grown on the surface of the planet and not delved into the planet and or grown unnecessarily for feeding the masses, as this gentleman mentioned. The food problem isn't about the amount, it's the quality of the food. We have tomatoes nowadays that you need three of them, whereas 50 years ago you just needed one for their nutritional value. That's fact. And hemp brings back the ground. It does all sorts of things. It brings back nutrition to the ground, so the fruit and veggies grown in there are then nutritious for the people. Medical systems are failing because of the food we are eating. Food be thy medicine, one wise man said many years ago. Therefore, let medicine be thy food. And McDonald's ain't food, and Coca-Cola's not a drink, and the stuff you buy in a supermarket's not food. There's only a small section in the supermarket that says health food. Wow. What's the rest of it?
BJ, thank you. Sharon Clayton, representing the Labor Party, of course, and sitting member for Newcastle. Do you believe that your party is doing enough on climate change?
It's the biggest issue facing any party of government. Probably, you know, one of the things that distinguishes all of our policy positions is that Labor Party is a party of government, and we have spent the 6 years that we've been in opposition trying to deal with the most uncertain energy space Australia has ever seen. We've had a government going through no less than 13 energy policies now. So it has made way for some very uncertain times in industry and the investment of renewables. So our policy is absolutely targeted around massive investment back into renewables, so that there's a 45%, a 50% renewable energy target by 2030. Cutting pollution, which is on the increase now, 45% by 2030, and zero net pollution by 2050. I met with a group of scientists and industry players just this morning around the use of hydrogen, which has enormous potential for dealing with both the emissions front and getting more renewables into our supply. I want to make sure we've got a $1.14 billion plan for hydrogen on the table at this election. It is, you know, the great hope in many ways, and I want to make sure that Newcastle has a lead role to play in that. We have all of the energy smarts here. When we were last in government, Labor made a big investment into the CSIRO National Flagship Energy Centre here. We've set up the Newcastle Institute of Energy and Resources. We've got the Deepwater Port that needs to be looking at ways to diversify its economic base as we're moving to a low-carbon economy.
A variety of state governments have contributed to those projects as well, of course.
Not into the NEAR program. I mean, yes, the state government made a contribution when Bob Carr was Premier and giving the land for the CSIRO Centre. That was part of the structural readjustment package that came with the BHP closure. Mm-hmm. One of the smartest lasting legacies from that structural readjustment package. So our policy is not only tackling the emissions factors that we need to drive down, massive boost into renewables, tackling the issues around storage for renewables. So we've got, when we were last in government, we had 1 million rooftops that we got solar panels onto. But now the problem is how households and businesses get to store that energy and be able to use it when they need it most. So subsidies around that. But we've also, in what is really critical and the role that Hunter members within the Labor Party have really played a key role in, is around what a just transition looks like for workers and affected communities like ours, because we've got real skin in the game here in Newcastle and our region. And so how do we move toward a low carbon economy without leaving workers and communities like ours hanging out to dry?
Okay, we'll wrap it up there. There's question number one. The second one is, how will you pay for all of your election promises? John, is the Greens Party able to substantiate the change that it wants to make? If we look at the environmental policy, for example, I notice that the Department of Environment and Energy says that on current projections, we'll be reducing our emissions by 2030 by just 7%. So there's a substantial amount of change required, change that the Greens would like to see happen. Can you afford it?
Yeah, look, in a country like Australia, a wealthy country like this, there's no excuse really for anyone being left behind. There's no excuse for us generating, you know, absurd surpluses or making extraordinary tax cuts for the very, very wealthy. And doing that by cutting public services, you know, massive cuts to healthcare, massive cuts to education, but as a way of producing a surplus. We're very much opposed to that. The important evolution that's happened in the Greens over the past two decades that we've been in the parliaments and had members of parliament at all levels is that we've had to be accountable for the policies that we've put forward. And that's why we go into every election with budgets that have been fully costed by the Australian Parliamentary Office. And I can stand here very confident in the sense of the policies and the plans that we have put in place to massively transform the Australian energy sector, but not just that, but also to give a huge boost to our public services can be delivered through a range of changes to the tax system. And the number one means that we would do that is by cracking down on the multi-billion tax avoidance industry in Australia. We know that one-third of corporations in this country pay no tax. And it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary for any of us who look at our pay slips on a weekly basis and see that money coming out to know that there are multinational corporations who simply avoid paying their fair share of the tax. It's important to get on top of that. We'll be reversing many of the billions of dollars worth of handouts that have been put by government into industry that create perverse outcomes for the community, redirecting those towards things that we want, like renewable energy, like healthcare, like education. We're going to avoid those tax cuts and reverse those tax cuts that have been directed to the super wealthy, and also make corporations pay their fair share for the pollution that they cause. Through these measures and ones like them, we're able to actually generate the kind of money that we can use to put into our the nation building projects and the energy renewal projects that the Greens have in mind, and ensure that we do have those public services intact and of a high quality that actually puts downward pressure on the cost of living.
Thank you for that, John. Darren Brollo, one of the accusations levelled at specific interest parties, of course, is you don't think about the big picture, the budget, sure. and where the money comes from and sure. where it goes to.
Sure.
What's your response to that?
Look, you know, it's very clear that I'm not privy to what the budget is, what we can spend in these areas. You know, I mean, I'm coming from a minor party. I'm not in the position to, you know, essentially talk economics as such. What I can say that, of course, is the Animal Justice Party have seats in Parliament. We can ensure that you know, that the money is projected in positive directions. We can, you know, ensure that the government in place is accountable, which is one thing that's very, very important, you know, to create some transparency across the government. So, you know, they're not behaving in a reckless way with Australian taxpayers' dollars, essentially. So,
okay. BJ Futa, what would the Great Australian Party do, and how would you pay for what you're trying to do?
Well, I must disagree quickly. The government is run like a corporation, and they do squander dollars recklessly, disgracefully. The country should be run by a democratic bunch of public servants, not a corporation. To fix that is my opinion, and also Great Australian Party position, is you assist the farmers, you assist the primary produce. You assist the people on the land. The exact opposite's happening at the moment. Rape, pillaging and plundering the land and selling things to everybody from overseas is not doing anything for the Australians, and then squandering that money into their own pockets and other things that they do. The corporation that is the Australian government listed on the stock exchange is a disgrace. It really is. So it's quite easy to see that the ripping off of the public is what it is they're doing, and that's quite easily fixed when you make them accountable, when you make them transparent. Trouble is, they're so transparent that they tell you that they're doing it and nobody can do anything about it. Everybody just accepts that the boys at the top bugger them up, screw them over, and it's fact. And we've got to stop lying to ourselves that we are really, really getting done over by a bunch of guys who line their own pockets and run the place like a business. It's okay. Exactly what it is.
All right, BJ Futa there, and Sharon Clayton.
As I started this interview, we've got a really bold, progressive future vision for Australia. So in order to ensure our commitments around, you know, the restoration of the $14 billion of cuts into public education, building better schools and hospitals in our communities, ensuring that we restore penalty rates for the 770,000 workers that lost them recently, get wages moving again, look at addressing housing and homelessness issues. They are all serious big investments into people and important capital infrastructure projects in our communities. So as the, you know, we are a party of government. We're not a protest group here. This is all of our policies have to be costed. And indeed, we've had to make some pretty tough decisions about how we raise that revenue out of the slice of the Commonwealth, which belongs to all of the taxpayers. And so we've come out, you know, more than 2 years ago, we put our cards on the table and said, there is a need for serious tax reform in Australia now. And that there's, many of the concessions that currently exist within our tax system are skewed towards favouring those who have more money than those that don't. And so closing down those major tax loopholes is a key component of Labor's policy for being able to afford our investment into schools, hospitals, jobs, and real action on climate change. These are all very costly, wicked problems that we're dealing with. So there are, you know, we've said we cannot any longer afford to spend, to give a so-called tax refund to people who are not paying tax anymore. That bill today stands at $6 billion. That is three times more than we would pay for TAFE and vocational education in Australia. I think most people are pretty shocked. In 2 years' time, that bill is going to be $8 billion. That is more than we spend in the entire nation on public education. It's an unsustainable tax concession. It's not even a tax, but it is an unsustainable trajectory we cannot afford. But we're also, you know, going to close down on, we're not going to allow people who have access to cash to, you know, we're going to cap their capacity to pay very expensive accountants to minimise their taxation at $3,000. And I'll give you a pretty scary figure. 69 Australians last tax year, earning more than $1 million, paid zero tax. And nearly a third of those people claimed more than $600,000 in tax-deductible accounting fees. We're going to say no. You've got a cap of $3,000. If you can't get your tax return done by somebody for less than $3,000, then there's some serious issues to address.
Sharon, we'll just wrap up, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Yes, closing those tax loopholes, the unsustainable tax concessions, that's how we'll be paying for our promises.
All right, they're the four candidates. Thank you so much to John McKenzie.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you coming into the studio today.
Pleasure.
Darren, thank you.
Thank you.
BJ coming in as well. We appreciate you, the diverse views we've had today. And Sharon, thank you so much
for
your response. Just reiterating that we invited all of those who are on the ballot to participate, as we will with every electorate. Participation is at the discretion of the candidate. If they can't come in or don't want to come in, it's not because an invitation wasn't extended to them. So we thank all of our candidates for taking the time and the effort to come in and present their position. Thank you so much.